pop algebra over the last 1.5 lectures. And so I won't go over all of that, but I will just recap the stuff about topological pop algebras, just so the language is still there. And then actually just hopefully today, there should be time for me to basically show how we have accomplished the first step of what we talked about at the very beginning, which is we at the end of today, hopefully, we will see how we have already quantized, or we've shown how any Levi algebra sits inside a quasi-triangular Levi algebra, and we will have quantized it into a quasi-triangular I-algebra. And so that was kind of step one, or it's kind of the first step of what Etienne of Cajdan do. So let me just remind you about topological Hopf algebras. Hopf algebra is topologically free. It's topologically free if A is equal to V H for some K vector space V. So elements are power series in H with coefficients in the vector space. And I pointed out that the topological Hopf algebras may not actually be Hopf algebras because the tensor product A tensor A is actually the completed tensor product. So the co-product on H on A goes into this, not into the literal tensor product. So I pointed that out, and then a topologically free Hopf algebra is a deformation. So a topologically free Hopf algebra is a deformation of another Hopf algebra, but just a regular Hopf algebra, A0. Will I call it A0? Yeah, so I'll call this one A. And so it's a deformation of Hopf algebra A0 if A mod H A is isomorphic to A0 as Hopf algebras. So in other words, the degree zero in H piece of A is just A0. And that is a Hopf algebra isomorphism, so all the structure all carries over. And then a topologically free Hopf algebra H is a quantized universal enveloping algebra if H mod HH is isomorphic to UG for some Lie algebra G, and where UG has the standard I-algebra structure. Or right, I should say Hopf algebra structure. Uh, And the classic example, which, I mean, I will just say it without showing it, is, or actually maybe I should make one little point, which is that if you take a group, you can get a Hopf algebra out of it, where the coproduct of an element G is just G tensor G, and S of any element, S being the antipode, is just 1. And any such Hopf algebra will be co-commutative by construction, because G gets sent by delta to G tensor G. And then similarly, if you look at any Lie algebra G and you look at the standard structure on UG, that is also by construction co-commutative. If you go to a deformation, so one of these guys, although in degree zero it has to be a UG, and in particular co-commutative in degree zero, the co-product as a whole may not be co-commutative. And in fact, that's kind of the point, or that's maybe one of the main points of these deformations, is that you can start with a co-commutative thing and end up with something that's not co-commutative. And maybe the first example of that was SL2, whether it's a group or a Lie algebra, and the resulting Hopf algebra is co-commutative, but then you get these things, SL2Q, which is not co-commutative, but it restricts in the case Q equals 0 to SL2. So that's the standard example of a deformation. Or it's an example. I don't know. Anyway, okay, so I made this claim and proved it last time. I'll just remind you. Any Lie algebra H, which is a deformation of a Hopf algebra A, has a unique Hopf algebra structure.
The meaningful way is the meaningful name is H0 for the Hopf
algebra. I guess it is.
Not that it matters.
So it has a necessarily unique antipode consisting with the antipode of H0. And then it, when you use that, it H with that antipode is a deformation of H0 as a Hopf algebra. So I won't go into that again. And instead, I will move on to new stuff. But before I go into new stuff, let me recall a few things. So, here, G plus G minus is a Mannan triple. And we saw that there was an isomorphism of UG with UG minus tensor UG plus. Each of these in turn was isomorphic to something we called M plus and M minus, where M plus was UG minus tensor some vector 1 plus. So 1 plus is the trivial representation of m plus. So ug plus acting on it would be 0, but ug minus acting on it will not be. So this, we just basically get a copy of ug minus here. And then we did the same thing for m minus. So we had this decomposition. And then we had defined this mg, which was the category of representations of ug, where morphisms are power series of morphisms. Power series in H with coefficients in morphisms from one representation to another. And we had this forgetful functor f, going from mg to topologically free vector spaces. And we should somehow we could see any f of v, so if v is any representation in here, we saw how we could see that as being Hom over g of, so in other words, maps from ug into v, but we need to add make this into a power series in H. So in other words, because these are G homomorphisms, any such map is defined uniquely by its value at 1. And so if you take its value at 1, that's a single vector. And that's the vector that, that we're talking about in here. So any particular vector here specifies a vector or the image of 1 here, and then you extend that to Hom's just by invariance under G. So that's how you get this isomorphism here. But then using this property, this is also isomorphic to Hom's over G of M plus tensor M minus comma V. And then we had defined a gadget maps JVW for any two representations V and W, taking us from F of V tensor F of W to F of V tensor W. And that was a kind of complicated expression where you, so again, we view this and this as being maps from M plus tensor M minus to V or W as the case may be. And we view this as a map from M plus tensor M minus to here. And the way we did this, I'm going to write it down in a second. Well, before I remind you what it is, let me tell you kind of the idea behind it, or at least my take on you know, some insight into what that complicated thing was. So, what we're looking for is a map, and I'll try to express this in the following way. Okay, so an element in here will be a map from UG to V tensor W, and it will be labeled as follows. So that will be something in here. So, how can we get such a thing? If we had a coproduct on UG, then we could split, and then we could apply V and W separately, and that would take us to here. And this is the tensor product. When you put the things side by side, it's the tensor product. Well, but we don't have this. But so what do we do instead? We do the following. We use the fact that we know that UG decomposes as this tensor product.
Sorry, why don't we have that? We do have a co-product on U of G, but you say you want something else.
Yeah, we want something else.
It's not that we don't have it.
Sorry, we want something else. We want something non-co-commutative. We have something, we have co-products on each of these pieces. And we will use the co-product on each of these pieces to get a co-product on their tensor product. So in general, you know, whenever you have two top algebras A and B, A tensor B also has a co-product, which is just, if you have an element A and an element B, you can send that to delta A tensor delta B B, and that will give you A1 tensor A2 tensor B1 tensor B2, where there are summations here. So this A1 is a summation over different A1, A2s, and similarly here. And what the co-product structure from A tensor B to A tensor B, A tensor B, requires you to flip these two guys. So you apply a flip, which I'll call 1 sigma 1, because it leaves this alone, flips the two middle ones, and leaves the third one alone, the last one alone. So you get summation A1 tensor B1 tensor A2 tensor B2, and what you now have is an element of A tensor B tensor A tensor B. So this 1 sigma 1 thing here will reappear. In pictures, what we've done is we've started with a bialgebra, sorry, a product or a tensor product of two bialgebras. We've split each one, and then we've crossed the two inner ones, and now we have, so we've done the following. So here we have A tensor B, tensor A tensor B, and that's how we've carried the co-product from each of the pieces to their product. So we do the same thing here, namely we say UG, we have this map 5. I guess I didn't give it a name, but I will call this phi. So we apply phi, and phi gives us this map. So UG minus, how am I reading this? This is the minus p. This is the plus piece, and this is the minus p coming out, p's coming out. And then we can split each of these, because we have a co-product here and here. Technically, it's really m, right? These are really m's, and so technically we have that. But the co-products are what I called I plus and minus before. But we have this co-product, and then what we do is we will cross these, just like we did over there, and then we will apply phi inverse, and phi inverse, And that gives us a copy of UG again. And then on each of these pieces, we can then apply V and W. So that's how we will go from a map from a UG to V and from another UG to V to just a map from a single UG to V sensor W. By composing this with V tensor W. So can I you already start erasing any memory?
Erase a CP.
Okay. So we've written down the formula for this J thing. So we define J, or we define J of some VW on the identity in UG. Okay, JVW of V tensor W will have the following effect on 1 plus tensor 1 minus, which is the 1 of UG. Well, it's phi of the 1 of UG. So, first step is, again, just really following what I wrote down over there, we apply the coproduct to each of the pieces. And this is repeating what we've seen before. And then I've left out parentheses, but the parentheses are like so. And so there was actually two associativities that were required to get this into the form like so. And there's more parentheses, I'm not sure exactly where. And then we flip the two middle guys with our betas that we had.
It presumably doesn't matter where. Right?
No, it doesn't matter where. So we apply one beta one, where beta was the flip that we got from the Drinfeld associator. And it's basically exponential of a chord pre-multiplied by a flip. So this is the usual, I guess we often call it R, this thing here. So that takes us to 1 plus tensor 1 minus tensor 1 plus tensor 1 minus, where again I'm leaving out parentheses. And then we have to reassociate back to the original form. I'll just do this. Because I think the idea is clear. And then we apply V tensor W, and we get mapped into V tensor W. And so that's exactly what I wrote down in picture. But maybe the picture is a little clearer than, as far as what's going on, than this. The one thing that I would point out is that here, although there's a crossing, it's just a crossing. It's not like one of these strands is going over the other. They literally are flips. Like this is a flip. But here, this is now beta, which is a crossing. Like beta does not square to one, this beta here. So at this point, this is a crop. This has meaning. This over now has meaning. So, okay. Now I'm going to write down the formula. More for just so that you have it on paper, as opposed to anything else. But,
So again, all the ones should be M's, right?
Well,
at the beginning it's an element, but...
Here it's an element, and we're applying this map to that element.
So it's still an element, but the moment you start doing associativities, it's no longer an element. I mean, it's an element, but not the one you wrote. Meaning, it's a member of M plus tensor.
Oh, you mean after here? Yeah, it's no longer this element.
Yeah, so it's a member of that space, which...
It's really, at this point, it becomes M's.
Which is...
Yeah, so that's right. And similarly here, these are M's. So JVW applied to V tensor W, which is a map, so applied to this thing, is exactly equal to the map V tensor W applied to phi. So this is all the associativities and everything in more detail. 1, 2, 3, 4, inverse. Phi 2, 3, 4, sigma 2, 3, e to the h, omega 2, 3 over 2, phi inverse 2, 3, 4, phi 1, 2, 3, 4. Apply to 1 plus, 1 plus, 1 minus, 1 minus. And then I will have this act on all this stuff. So I end up with V tensor W. All the stuff to the left doesn't change. 5, 2, 3, 4, and then here I get e to the h omega 3, 2 over 2, but it's symmetric anyway. Phi inverse 3, 2, 4, phi 1, 3, 2, 4. 1 plus, 1 minus, 1 plus, 1 minus. And part of the reason that I wrote all of that out is that I want to define a new... Well, I might have referred to this before, but I'm going to define this thing J, which is really J of H, as phi inverse tensor phi inverse of all of this. So hopefully this is clear enough. I'm dropping the V tensor W and I'm saying J of H is phi inverse of this stuff. There. And this stuff here is sitting on 4 strands. Right? We're at this point, we're down here. 1, 2, 3, 4. So we apply phi inverse to the leftmost piece and phi inverse to the rightmost piece. Basically, I'm saying J is down to here. So J is that clear what I'm doing with this? Okay. So then J is an element of UG tensor UG. J of H is an element of UG tensor UG. So it's a power series, of course, so it's in here. And so maybe I'll write it with a subscript JH JVW of V tensor W of 1 plus tensor 1 minus is equal to V tensor W of J just by so almost by definition. So I'm using, in other words, I'm viewing V and W as being two slightly different things. Here I'm viewing V as acting on M plus tensor M minus, and here I'm viewing V as acting on UG. So, but subject to that, I've essentially here just rewritten what I wrote here. And the thing which I think I'm right about, but hopefully we'll find out very soon if I'm not, is I think we can commute the JH to the left here and get this. Where I'm now viewing, I guess I should maybe write V1, W1. So this is V, the vector V acting on 1 and W acting 1 plus and W acting on, or 1 and W acting on 1. And you can, the reason you can move that to the left is that V and W are G homomorphisms. And so in other words, J is equal to a sum J1 tensor J2. And then if you have V tensor W acting on J, that's sum of V J1 tensor W J2, which by the fact that these are G homomorphisms is the sum of J1 V of 1, V of 1, and J2 W of 1. And then I think you can just move that out and get J in front. But please tell me if that doesn't make sense. So J because the factors V of 1, W of 1 are the same for each element of each term in this power series. So you can just pull it out and just get that. So the end result is JVW of VW is is the product, well, essentially the product of this power series applied to these two these elements. Okay. Can I erase this, I guess. So at this point, this J, and I proved this one or two or three classes ago, This J gives us a tensor structure on the forgetful functor, which is largely, well, I've erased the relevant part, but it gives us a tensor structure, quote unquote, on the forgetful functor, so we can apply that so-called Tanaka-Crine yoga to get a bialgebra structure on UGH. So we have the J is a tensor structure. I'm going to prove a bunch of what's actually contained in this. Let me write it down. So on the forgetful functor, so by Tanaka-Crine, we get a bialgebra structure on the endomorphisms of F, which is isomorphic to UGH. And the key part of this is the construction of the coproduct. And so I'll remind you how that coproduct works. If A is in UGH, and hence an endomorphism of the forgetful functor, we need to construct a delta A, which is an endomorphism on F of B tensor, F of W, so acting on itself. And the way we do that is with this composition. F of V tensor F of W goes via JVW to F of V tensor W. And then we have a coproduct here, which is just the standard coproduct on a UG. So delta 0 of A. And then the final step is we invert the J, and we go back to this. So the delta is the composition of these things. And so we write delta is J VW inverse. So VW, for any particular VW, delta has this form, delta 0 J VW, so these are compositions. These are compositions here. So here we can view, these are viewed as maps, but the reason I'm being pedantic about saying these are compositions is that we can also view them as products of power series. So we can view the delta zero of A as a power series, and then delta A would be our good old element J inverse multiplied by delta 0 A multiplied by J. So these are now power series, and this is power series multiplication. So this is, or I found pretty darn confusing, this whole dichotomy here, but anyway. Is there any questions or comments? There's these two different ways of viewing the J's and the deltas, and usually in papers they don't tell you which one they're doing. But just bear in mind that there are the two ways, and I don't know, just have to work it out each time. All right. So, okay, so now I will write down a theorem which is partly already proved and partly not, but it kind of brings everything together, I think. So, well, first a little remark, which is since J starts with 1, it's 1 mod H. In degree 0, delta is delta 0, and S is S0, well this is not because J is 1, this is by how you construct the S, let me just bear with me on this. So U G H is a Hopf algebra deformation of U G. Okay, that's how we define Hopf algebra deformation. The key part is that delta in degree 0 is delta 0. And then this fact here is just how we constructed S. We constructed S as a deformation of S0. So what we have is we have exhibited UG of H as a deformation of UG, and we will call it, which we call U H G. So this is kind of goes back to something Dror was saying earlier. U G H has a coproduct which is co-commutative, but it also, as of now, has this coproduct which is not necessarily co-commutative. And so when we're referring to this, we usually write UHG to make clear that we're talking about this vector space, but with this perhaps non-co-commutative co-product. Whereas if we talk about this as being a Hopf algebra, I guess the implication is probably usually that it's delta zero we're talking about. So there's two structures now in the same vector space. And can I erase?
Let me take pictures, please. Yes.
So I don't know if this is a theorem or sort of a grab bag of points, some of which we have already proved, some of which we will prove. UHG is UGH as vector space. So it's the same vector space. N epsilon eta, so the product, co-product, and sorry, product, unit, and co-unit, or I guess maybe the other way around, are the same for both. However, delta is only delta 0 mod h, and s is s0 mod h. And specifically, we have this formula, delta, and I'll put it in quotes, delta equals j inverse delta 0 j. And this is partly where some confusion might arise, because that way of writing things suggests a composition. But usually when this is written with no subscripts here, what this means is that it's really a functional equation. In other words, what it means is delta of A, where A is any element of UGH, is equal to the product of the following power series. This product of power series. So it's kind of a notation that is used. That's what this means. Similarly, and here we're getting into new stuff, S is the following. Oops. And again, this is in quotes, meaning that S applied to some A is the product of power series Q times S0 of A times Q inverse, where Q is the following thing. So this is a power series J. We apply S0 tensor 1 to it, and then we multiply the pieces together. This is new. So I will show that this is true. But if it is true, it's clear that in degree 0, you get S0. Because in degree 0, you just have a 1 here, and you just end up with S0. So and a couple more points. If we set R to be equal to J log inverse E.
So you mean the J to 1?
Yeah. Okay. If we set R is J minus Q1, okay?
Yes.
E to the H omega over 2 J, then UHG comma R is a quasi-triangular bialgebra, Pfaff algebra. And in fact, and a quantization of G comma little r. So quantization of G comma little r just means that in degree 1, r is big R is little r. So I will prove this and rewrite the definition. But so in degree 1, you just get R. And this R comes from it's the canonical element in our quasi-triangular, in our Dreyfus double. And the sum of what's the sum of this? And last point is the quasi-classical limit of UHG is U G. That's what I really want to say.
Sorry, I don't understand the statement.
It's not what I mean. It's what I wrote, but it's not what I mean to say. I think that is what I mean to say. If this would make sense. I think it's my word. So, in other words, in degree one, the main content of this statement is that in degree one, the co-product is delta. So, I will come back and define this statement and prove that it's true. But essentially, the idea is much like this quantization idea here, namely that in degree one, delta more or less coincides with, big delta more or less coincides with little delta. This is anti-symmetric and big delta isn't, so there's an anti-symmetrization that has to happen. But essentially, big delta in degree one is little delta. So, this kind of, first of all, hopefully, you see how this is sort of completes one stage of what we needed to do. A lot of this I've proved. I think essentially down this, it's all done. But so the remaining part has to be done. Maybe the other thing, which is technically done but is worth doing again or doing, is the Tanaka crime business. So I sort of said quickly that by Tanaka crime we get a bi-algebra structure, the main part of which is constructing this co-product. But I'm not even sure if I ever showed that the co-product is co-associative. So I might have or might not have. It follows from Tanaka crime, but I will also prove that part. So tell me when to stop. I put all this on the board, and unless you guys want to stay quite a while, I don't know if I'll prove everything. So just whenever you start getting bored out.
Say what is missing.
What do you mean?
I'm confused. You said this is part one. What is part two? What is?
Well, part two is, well, what part one is given a Lie bi algebra, you can show how it sits inside, well, it's Grünfeld double, which is a quasi-triangular Lie bi algebra. And what we've really done here is quantize the quasi that Grünfeld double. So G, I guess that's gone now, but what we've quantized is G, not G plus or G minus. So, and what we really want to quantize is the G plus or the G minus. So we've only shown how any G plus sits inside a G, which can be quantized, but we don't yet know how to quantize what we want. So we've kind of done the first step, but the second step is to show how you can find within this UHG some sub Hopf algebra, which is a quantization of the G plus. And then the third stage will be proving that that construction is universal in the sense that it doesn't just work for finite dimensional Hopf algebras. So really there were three parts to the paper, and this basically will finish the first part. Relatively clear. Okay. So do you want to go to how, like, you must be tired. I don't know.
We're all tired.
7. How are you feeling? Oh,
thanks for actually doing it at this time.
I'm easy. Like, we can adjourn now, adjourn in half an hour, do whatever.
So are we continuing in general?
Let's talk about it later.
Okay. We should... I think we should adjourn and sit at home, or not at home, over wine or over something, and
sounds good.
Talk about plans, whatever.
Okay.
Okay. So, Peter, Louis, you can turn it off.